All right. Hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. It is me, Adam, and it is you, Steven. What's up, man?
Hey, cheers. How's it going, man? This has been a wild couple of days for you and I, so yeah. I'm excited to get into tonight's show and just have a little fun. A little kickback.
Yeah, I know.
A little
bit. And in fact, we were like talking so much beforehand, and you were like, man, we could be doing this on the show. It's like, oh, yeah. It's fun. Yeah. No, but like, today we're going to talk about a few things. You know, there's that Gundam VR, and there's way more information about it, and it looks awesome. We'll talk about that.
Okay, so I'm glad like you caught the Gundam conference from the other day and all that. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, cool. So, okay, yeah, maybe we can talk more about that. And also, the Acolyte, I remember, I think it was your show yesterday, or was it last time, where we were like...
We've been kind of talking about the Acolyte a lot, on and off, both on show, off show. I think we talked about it a lot with Kyle, you know, over at Free Speech Geek. Because he's a big Star Wars guy, too, so...
Yeah, and I don't want to, like... beat a dead horse, but I think there's some more interesting things to talk about with the Acolyte that not only does it speak on the culture, but also just speaks on understanding like filmmaking in general. Like, you know, it's more of an interesting exercise to dissect these things and not really that we're trying to take a side or anything. And that came from the Red Letter Media video I shared with you, where it's interesting seeing them like dissect, like they were talking about the Acolyte, but it was more, they were just talking about like filmmaking business in general, the generations.
Yeah, I really appreciated the kind of discussion. I'm glad you shared that with me. I did watch it all the way through, and I was like, it's interesting the way that they kind of talked about stuff and like talked about the discourse around it as opposed to like, you know, trying to engage in sort of online drama about stuff. They were like, well, let's analyze the drama and analyze why it might be, why it exists, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, I love that, because I think it kind of can help too, like, if you come across an instance where you're talking with someone and then there is some unnecessary, like, conflict or something, if you can understand where that's coming from, it might be easier to resolve it. I don't know.
Yeah, and you see it a lot in the Star Wars fandom, but you see it in the Gundam fandom too. And I think that's where the kind of bridge exists.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll get into that. But real quick, very interesting thing. I posted it yesterday, but I had a chance to interview David Jaffe, video game developer. And it was very interesting. I'd reached out to him a while ago. He was a developer of, like, Twisted Metal, God of War. And the thing is, he's like a big film making fanatic too. So like, I've been following him forever. I mean, even since like the 2000s when I was doing blogging stuff, but like, he's always had this energy that reminds me of me and you. It's like this creativeness. And sometimes like, how do you harness it and utilize it and how you can break down certain aspects of creating things? And I don't know.
Yeah. But Jaffe's got like a level of hyperactivity where it's like, you can tell that he's got so much rattling around in his head that he has a very hard time like getting it down on paper and expressing it. So I love, I love that he does like a live show now, and that he kind of gets to, cause it reminds me a lot of like the Blue Gamer show that you do in the mornings, where it's like, you get a chance to kind of, get all these things off of your chest,
exactly,
you know, and express these thoughts, which is kind of like what we do on both of our shows. It's like you and I get an opportunity to kind of explore the thoughts that we've been having and use each other and the chat. I mean, hey, you guys are part of the conversation too.
Yeah, the chat's always awesome.
You know, we get to use each other as sounding boards and really coalesce and manifest these ideas that we have about these franchises, these video games, these movies. And we get to kind of distill them into something real and something awesome. And so it's cool that you got to be a part of that with David Jaffe too.
Yeah, it was neat because I had reached out to him about just recording it. So then I would post it on Blue Gamer, and then like, he had been busy, and then he's like, hey, can we move it? And then when the day came, and I was like, you know what? He could also say again, no, sorry, can't do it. But he was like, hey, how about we do it live? Like on my YouTube. I was like, oh my God. But then he's all like, and then we could do it where there's no chat. So it's just you and I, because you know how chat is. And I had a great time because it was, and I even told him, like, it's almost like a mentor style situation where I'm almost, as I'm asking questions and bringing up things about myself, I'm doing it in like reference to what I would want to learn from him. And it's cool because today on his YouTube, I'm a member of his YouTube, he has this new series now, and it was episode one where he was talking about the first game he had to design, and he even had the paper that he, the old notes that he was writing on and everything. And he was even like saying how horrible he was doing. He was like, there's no way that I would be able to do this today. You know, it was at a time where Sony was just throwing money to be like, let's get, and it was like in the making of the PlayStation. They're just kind of like, let's just get some ideas out there. And
sure.
Yeah. So seeing the game making process helps us, you know.
I learned so much just in that interview with him, where it was like, man, he was trying to go to USC film school to study, to study film. I flew out to LA and I interviewed and I got into USC film school, and I was I'm just not really into it. Like, it's so interesting to hear these kind of, these overlapping stories. And so, and again, this goes back to like why you create content, why I create content, is it's like, you know, we're talking about the guy that created Twisted Metal, which was one of the biggest games of the late 90s, early 2000s, like that franchise, right? And so to find that you and I have things in common with him, to find that you and I have had similar experiences to him, hopefully, you know, you guys that are watching the show understand that, like, you are all just like one good idea, one good execution away from being the next David Jaffe, the next Hideo Kojima, the next
George Lucas,
the next Lucas. Yeah. The next Tomino. Like, what I want people to understand is that A, it's never too late, and B, just start, just make your first bad idea, because I guarantee you what ends up happening. And I was watching an Alex Hormozi video earlier today where he was like, get your first bad idea out into the public, because they'll let you know what's wrong with it, and then they'll refine it and perfect it. And then what ends up happening is you have a great idea because it's been honed by everyone around you. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, man, how did you have your first hit? Like, you know, you nailed it, right? And it's like, well, because I know that it was the process of like a ton of work that goes into it. You think that I'm an overnight success. I'm a 30-year overnight success. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Even it's funny because when people call into David Jaffe's show and be like, oh, I love God of War, Twisted Metal. This is an old school phone. What am I doing? Here we go. This is what the kids do nowadays. No. Right? Has your daughter started doing that Zoolander, yet?
Like the little.
Well, what was interesting was people would say that, and he always goes, yeah, but it was a whole team effort. Like, he always downplays it, which is funny. But
of course, yeah.
So what was really cool about the show, though, so it's on his channel, but it's actually going to be on my channel. I'm going to, like, cut the beginning and end and just make out and put it on Blue Gamer. But and I might actually cut the beginning and put it on Gundam Explained, because the beginning of the show is me trying to convince him to get into Gundam. And that, I loved it. Like,
yeah. It was hilarious. Like the people in chat that was like, I love how every time Jaffe has someone on, he talks about the anime that he likes for the first 30 minutes. It's like, yeah, that's Adam. That's
awesome. No, that's cool. Cause, I feel like that's kind of my essence. Like, I love Gundam so much. It's like, I know. And that's the thing. I know he's the type of guy that loves the storytelling and stuff in the ways that we do. So it's like telling him about, dude, you're going to love Gundam. Check it out, you know, and then all the other
when
people.
When you see people that are excited about something, and this goes, we're probably going to expand on this as we start talking about tonight's topics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when you see someone who's so excited and so passionate about something, it makes you interested in the thing that they're interested in.
Yeah.
And that's part of why you and I have, you know, I don't want to say that we're like 100% purely positive, but we're like a mostly positive, like
mostly positive, but critical when it's appropriate, like the non-shill style, you know,
exactly. Yeah. Like it's honest, but we are authentic when we're excited about something.
Yeah. And I think the term is the toxic positivity, right? We're not that, you know, have you heard that term? Yeah. And I think that kind of coincides with that whole like sales thing or shilling, where it's almost like you're just being positive, just not genuine just because. And so, you know, you gotta.
Yeah. That was so funny story. Actually, that came up at work when we were talking about, like, you know, AI generated blog posts and stuff like that. And what I noticed is that AI generated content is toxic positivity. Because, for instance, like there was a golf tournament, Travelers Cup. Scottie Scheffler won that tournament. Now, an AI talks about, oh man, there was a lot of exciting shots during this tournament and all this stuff like that. But a person would say, hey, wasn't Scottie Scheffler arrested 2 weeks ago in the middle of a tournament? Like, isn't that hilarious? Like, yeah, and that's where I was like, man, this is what's missing, is people are too positive to the point where it's like sterile, right? I love the fact that we can talk about a guy that was arrested for a DUI in the middle of a golf tournament, and then the next 2 weeks he wins a golf tournament later. Like,
yeah,
that's not even something that's super negative, but it's a funny story.
Yeah, that's hilarious. A really good point. It's
awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good point. That is interesting. But yeah, you know, when King Dylan saying shatting on things from a place of love. Yeah, of
exactly.
Course, you know, was he driving a car or a golf cart? Yeah, because right. I think either way.
He assaulted a police officer actually during the arrest, which was hilarious. I mean, again, funny story. If you guys haven't read about it, even if you don't care about golf, look up.
Yeah, I had not heard about that.
I see Jam Calix giving us the Red Letter Media shout. Consume product, get excited for next product.
Yeah. No, that's cool stuff. A couple other things. I think I said that. Yeah, the David Jaffer stuff. Okay, so the other thing that's really awesome, you know, because I love robot spirits, is that, you know, these came in the mail just early this week. The Robot Spirits Blue Destiny Unit 3, but also the Unit 2 in exam mode. Reviews up for this. One will go up for this later. Those are like the top tier of Robot Spirits. But it's very interesting, and I posted this on the YouTube posts or whatever. It was the difference between I got the high grade and I had fully detailed it, top coded it, everything. And so I'll do a side-by-side comparison of both of those, because I'm just fascinated by how different interpretations of these mechs are, you know? Because what if a kid grew up with a certain Gunpla from a certain era, and then someone else grew up with like the high-end figure from another designer, but they have these two different thoughts of the same Gundam? You know, I'm just fascinated by that.
And you and I talk about it all the time, how like, you know, the 0080 designs were not meant like different models of Zaku and Dom and stuff like that. It was just like, this is a different interpretation of a Zaku. And it wasn't until later they were like, this isn't really going to fit in the canon. Let's add an FZ to it. I love that stuff because it goes back to that sort of oral tradition of a culture that tells stories, you know, orally, and instead of having written word, right? So everyone's version of the story is slightly different.
Well, okay, so this, it reminds me of this thing. It's Super Sentai. In America, like, what if you grew up watching Super Sentai and then all of a sudden you're 40 and then America comes out with Power Rangers and it's like, okay, I love it.
What's the Yellow Ranger, a guy?
So think if, that is funny to think, you know, with all this woke nonsense, like Power Rangers did it first, but not really. But what's interesting is if we were to look like 1,000 years from now and somehow there was this, like I don't know how to explain this, some artifact found in Japan, some artifact found in North America. The one in Japan was the Super Sentai, the original Power Rangers, and then the one in America was the American version. And then archaeologists are like, okay, what's going on here? There's two different interpretations of these ancient warriors. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it goes back to those types of theories about mythology where, you know, like the Roman gods and the Greek gods are basically the same, but they have different names because they were in different places and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and we see that in real archaeology. I say real archaeology, but like, honestly, if aliens visited our planet, like way after we're extinct, they are going to find real archaeology of like all of our VHS tapes of.
That's an interesting way to interpret it. It's almost like we're creating our own archaeology in a way, whether it's going to survive. Like, do you think there's a survivable format? And then it makes me think, oh, maybe we figured that out a long time ago. And that's why there's stone tablets and emerald tablets. So,
yeah, I was going to say, have you ever done like a time capsule, like one of those things that you load it up with stuff and bury it? And
I forget where it is. Something I did in school.
Right. It's so funny. Like, and this is why, did you ever finish watching Cowboy Bebop?
I had only watched the movie.
Oh, okay. So there is an episode where they discover a Betamax tape, which old heads like you and I remember Betamax, right?
And I'm gonna mark that down to watch that show, actually.
Yes, definitely do that.
You talk about it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I feel like it's right up our alley as far as like sci-fi, anime, that sort of thing. But yeah, there's an episode where they find a Betamax tape, but they don't have a way to play it. And it's like, it becomes this mission where it's like, well, wait, this kind of looks like it fits in here. And it's like, no, that's a VHS player. That's different than the Betamax tape. And it's like, okay, so we know that there's this one Betamax player in this old abandoned mall that's been flooded for like 200 years. And like, that kind of stuff is so fascinating to me because you know, one day our grandkids are going to stumble upon a cassette tape that we had from our parents, right? And it's going to be like, what the heck is this thing? Like, it says that it has music on it, but like, this has music on it. Why does this, like, what are you talking about? How do I get this on this?
That's funny, because I've already converted all my parents' home movies to digital.
Yeah,
I have them in separate locations just in case, which then those are going to be gone. I mean, the VHS tapes were already wearing out, so it's good that I captured when I did, but even that can deteriorate too. So and like, what is it? So, and that's why it's interesting to think in ancient times things were written in these like the Epic of Gilgamesh. You know, there's all these cuneiform tablets. It's like they were smart enough, if that's really the right way to explain it, to document things in stone. And we're not doing this nowadays. If there was an EMP blast, all of our information would be gone. People that had a prescription that was being shipped to them every 2 weeks, that whole thing would be disrupted. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like life saving. So yeah, crazy.
We got on a wild tangent, but I love it.
It included Power Rangers. How often can you just randomly insert Power Rangers into something?
Right. Maybe Power Rangers archaeology.
Yeah. Okay. So, is there anything else I want to bring up before going into the next topic? No, I think we're good. Okay. So, Silver Phantom, the VR thing. I've been waiting to be like, okay, what is this going to be?
I love that you describe it as the VR thing, because like, it's been such a mystery since it was announced. It was like, we know that it's VR, but it's not quite a game. It's not quite a movie. So, but now we have more.
Yeah, intel. Because, you know, originally they were showing it was like a movie that you partake in. You can look up, you can see everything. But then they're showing clips of like playing a game. Not only that, but it's almost like you're holding the Gundam like a toy and playing with it. This is like the ultimate thing I've always wanted. Like, look at that. Like picking it up. You've chosen that to, and then walking through, like, this makes me super excited. And we have a Meta Quest, but there's the new 3 that's out, and it's like, oh, I'd probably rather have the 3 to play this. Because, I mean, when you see something like this, isn't this what they should be doing, and they're actually doing it?
I mean, this is exactly what I do at my desk with my Gundam, with my Gunpla. I'm like, pew, pew,
pew. Yeah, I mean, I even have M. Bison, you know, versus the, what am I doing? No, but, I mean, the only other thing, and I think that's what they're kind of teasing here, is going up to the cockpit. I think they're even explaining it like that. I can't wait. I really can't. Like, I could see myself totally getting lost in this. And you see, like, wave 6 out of 6. So it's like a wave based thing, which is pretty sick. And
yeah, everyone loves a good survival mode, right? Like, you know.
Yeah. Because that you can just sit there and listen to some Gundam music while running around shooting. And I wonder.
Do you think that it actually photo scans your bedroom, or is this someone else's bedroom that we're in?
I was just going to ask you that, too. I wonder if.
Because my shelf is not that clean. I'm going to be honest.
I bet they set something up for this, but it, to me, it seems like that would be the plan to have it where, yeah, it's because the new stuff they've added, even they've updated the other, the MetaQuest 2 to have better, whatever you call it, where you see outside the thing.
Like the augmented reality, which, yeah. I mean, isn't it funny that like augmented reality has kind of gone away a little bit in favor of more virtual reality applications?
I think it's going to, like, I think it's a constant bounce until they combine, because I am starting to see more, they're really expensive right now, but you can buy glasses on like Amazon that actually project things for you in the world. You can hook it up to devices and stuff.
Well, and I know that this is kind of outside of your realm, but like, for instance, that actor Joe Manganiello is really big in like the D&D community and like tabletop role playing.
Yeah.
And they have like a tabletop role playing AR suite where it's like, you know, you can project a dragon out onto your table and like, oh, you know, look, I'm going to move my character this many squares over and then it gets attacked by the dragon. Like, so there is like a, there's like a bleed over, right? Where it's like, some people want like a true VR experience and some people want something that's more, yeah, you're right. Like, I think the Google Glasses, like they have like, you can project your grocery list on the fridge or something like that.
Yeah. And even right now, someone did a review recently. There's these glasses you can buy on Amazon. A lot of these are between like $400 and $700, but he was on his couch, plugged it into the Steam Deck, had his glasses on, sitting back, and the Steam Deck projected the screen in front of him really big. And I'm like, that's the perfect scenario for like, crash on your couch, play a game, have a huge screen projected in front of you.
If they could just project my house, but not filthy, I would.
Project a maid. Okay, now we're getting some. We should change subject.
All right.
This is going to turn.
Give the maid cat ears. Yes.
No. We're going down the wrong path
here. We took it too far. Stop, go back.
No, but anyway, to be honest, this now has cemented it to be something super cool and not just like a gimmick of, because if we're getting both like a story and a game, even if they're both light, having both of those things to do, totally awesome.
And I do wonder if there's some kind of correlation between this and what they're doing with the metaverse stuff, you know?
You would think so. That would have to be part of it, because seeing the hand put the thing down, that describes
MetaQuest, like it's all
All right, let's move on to this one. And I don't really care about drama too much, but I want to kind of distill this thing, because I remember before Witch for Mercury, you know, they got married, they had their rings, right? And then there was something that said, oh, they don't have their rings in some photos, but.
Right. There was two different publications of a magazine, the digital version and the print version. And like the print version said one thing, the digital version said another. And, we'll get into it, I'm sure.
Yeah, because so what we're looking at, Xionic Scanlations does amazing stuff for the Gundam community, and it's like, apparently the G-Witch marriage thing is still an issue. In true Gundam fashion, a shareholder cosplayed as Saleta. That's interesting. A shareholder cosplayed as Saleta. So a shareholder, I would think, would be someone that's a millionaire, at least.
I mean, you know, or, I always think back to, like, did you ever watch that movie Mr. Deeds with Adam Sandler?
Oh, yeah, but I totally forget it.
Yeah, they have that big annual shareholder meeting, right? And it's got everybody from like the Texas beef tycoon to like a veterinarian, because ultimately shareholders of a company, of an organization, it can range from something like you said, like a millionaire that's like, oh, I speculate on stocks and gamble on all these different investments. But it can go down to something as simple as like, I'm just a fan of the project and a fan of the franchise, and so I bought into it.
But how much would that cost, though? I mean, I guess it depends. But like, if I said I wanted to be a shareholder of Gundam,
would I mean, I guess it does depend on.
That's what I'm thinking. This person would have to be a millionaire.
I mean, maybe they only own like two or three shares, and two or three shares probably only amounts to like $80. You know what I mean?
Well, okay. So a couple things from this is, and I guess I'll finish. How do you justify the decision to suggest Sule Mio's? Oh, I see what they're saying. Marriage in the narrative, only to subsequently adopt an official stance that appears. So adopt an official, but that appears. So it's not, that's not official. to contradict this implication to which the response was just as PR sounding as the original statement. Our stance is that diversity includes how one interprets such portrayals. Blah, blah, blah. I kind of don't care.
But right. That's legal speak, yeah. Right? Like,
but like, so Xeonic Scanlations, who I like, is saying apparently it's an issue, shareholder, but there's like no link. There's no source, but there's...
Man, I sure hate that. Like,
yeah, and then so there's, you know, this person that's following up, because I guess they're showing there's rings on, like, the toy or something.
Right, the Funko Pops, sure.
But I wonder how much this is just one person saying something, but then the internet takes that, oh, that's the narrative.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, no, look, watch the show, you can see what happened. But I think they're kind of playing it safe. And you can see this with Star Wars right now is people are using identity politics. And I don't want to like talk bad about anything. It's very easy to go online and get brainwashed. And I think brainwash is the wrong word. It's just like with me and like junk food in the past or having habits that are not good. If you sit there and you're just constantly getting this information, that is going to be your reality. And
yeah.
And there's a lot of labeling nowadays going around, it's the idea is to say, well, this is this, and because this is this, that means this isn't this.
Yeah.
And then that causes people to be like, well, then we need to fight, we're on the wrong side, we need console war, I don't know. And it's like, well, that doesn't need to happen. I think it's best for the art to speak for itself.
Yeah.
If they came out and said, look, we don't want them to be married because we think it's wrong that lesbians are getting married, then sure, let's have a discussion about that to say, hey, no, we should be treating everyone equal.
Well, so I guess a similar example to this would be kind of like with J.K. Rowling going back and saying like, well, actually these characters in Harry Potter were gay, even though you didn't see it in the books, kind of stuff, like where it's like, well, if it's true, then why wasn't it in the books? And if it's not in the books, then what, you know what I'm saying? But yeah. Let's take what's being presented for us as fact. Like, let's assume that this interaction did happen, because to your point, you know, there's no source cited, and that's a whole other discussion that we could have.
Yeah.
But I can't help but ask myself what the motive behind a question like this is, because we're talking about like shareholder meeting, right?
Yeah.
We're not talking about like, hey, let's interview the creators, let's interview the writers behind the show. We're talking about like something that's more business related. And then the question is something that's story related. So like, imagine if you would, like, I don't know, let's say you go to a Disney shareholder meeting and some random bean counter, some accountant is sitting there and you're like, hey, you know, in Frozen 2, I noticed that, you know, this character, Agnar, was saved by the woman, but they don't identify her as the mother until halfway through the story. Why did you choose to do that? It's like, is this really the forum? Is this the place to ask about that?
And are you insinuating, are you assuming negative, like a negative?
Right.
In the first place. And it's like, oh.
And so I think that especially with this question, you know, let's take the controversial topic out of it. And maybe I'm going to introduce an even more controversial topic. Imagine you're at a shareholder. Imagine you're at a shareholder meeting and you're like asking someone at Bandai Corporate, excuse me, how is Thunderbolt canon when the Atlas Gundam is clearly more advanced than the RX-81, which is debuted in, you know, 0081 Senki? You know, like,
good question. But
right, great question. Cool, great question. But like, is it the forum? Is it the place? I think that when you look at the motive behind a question like this and the forum that it's being asked, it's a cynical question, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to get some kind of official confirmation of a theory that you might have, regardless of whether it's true. Like, personally, I think that clearly from what I saw in the show, like the relationship between Suleta and Miorne is authentic, right?
Yeah.
But you're asking the question not because you truly care, not because it's something meaningful to you, but you're asking
ambiguous because it's right in the show.
Right.
Yeah.
You're asking because you want to have some kind of official stance. You want some official statement so that you can go on Twitter and dunk on people for being wrong. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And I know that I typically tell people, like, don't assume motive, but when there's so much motive built into the question, you can't help but speculate. Like, you know, if it is so core to your being that Thunderbolt is not canon, for instance, then don't think it is. It doesn't matter. As long as you enjoy what you enjoy, who cares what somebody on Twitter thinks? But when you start asking questions of official, you know, people that are associated with the show, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get evidence that you can use to dunk on the people that disagree with you. And that is something I can't get behind.
Yeah. And it's very interesting too, because a lot of times, and again, because this question is being asked is because there's this like ongoing culture war, but mainly in social media or whatever,
yeah,
where it's like, oh, and I saw this a lot recently with video games, the whole Sweet Baby Ink thing, and it's, or people just fighting for no reason. And yeah, it's like, if this is being brought up because the idea of things being woke versus non-woke is what we're getting at here, I would say, well, as which for Mercury as a show, it wasn't a bad show. And in fact, it's not my type of thing, but I think the relationship element of Witch Mercury was its strongest element, stronger than the robots and the politics. So for what it was doing with the relationship, that was great. There is nothing bad about that. You can't say that Witch for Mercury is bad because it's trying to be woke. In my opinion, no, they did good writing. Okay. So then you get Acolyte, where it's kind of like the same thing, where you get people online complaining that it's bad, but then you get people that complain because it's woke. But it's like, no. I'm watching the Acolyte, and I guess it's your opinion, but the show is just not good. Like, the right things that they would say are woke about it, like, let's say, like, for instance, the Acolyte, I think the actors are really good. Like, even the Wolverine.
I mean, they got Carrie Ann Moss in there. Like, I mean, they did get, like, some talented people involved in that show. And I know that a lot of people, like, with the Acolyte, it's like a debate about canonicity and stuff like that. And ultimately, what my question is, like, would canonicity even matter if the show were good?
Right. Exactly. That is a very good point, because people be like, I like this idea for canon. Let's go with this, because canon has been changed.
Yeah. Like, and that's what it comes down to, is it's like, who cares whether it's woke or whether it's canon, whether it's not, whether it, those things only matter if the product is good or not. And if the product's good, people are not going to care whether, because, I mean, there are plenty of like woke movies and stuff that I love. I mean, shoot, you and I love The Boys.
Yeah. You know, because I think you know what? Did you watch the new episode? Five?
I don't know if I'm caught up yet, but
I think it just came out today, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so yeah, then I'm not caught up.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything. I can't wait for you to watch it. But anyway, you know, what's interesting too is that, like, I when it comes to identity politics, I think there is some, like, real value in where that's coming from. I do think there is some, but then I think it gets weaponized is the problem. And then when you're on social media and just scrolling, and it's a thing where humans want that sort of interaction. Oh, something to get angry about. Oh, I can then fight. And then the Schadenfreude, where, oh, I've got this person. Now I feel, you know, and that's, it's so with Red Letter Media, they had this review of the Acolyte, and I'm like, why would they review that? But it was more of them talking about this and how, like, and I love how they brought it up. George Lucas comes out with Star Wars. What are the politics around that time? They went through the wars, post-World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and his idea was, oh, yeah, the rebels against the Empire. The Americans come to Vietnam. Some people could easily, and they have, would say, well, is George Lucas a communist? Because he's trying to say that the American Empire is bad. That guy is bad. Or, you know, it's, oh, is he being woke? Or, you know.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, like, I think that they cited an interview between him and James Cameron where he was talking about, like, oh, yeah, Han Solo and Princess Leia, they're Viet Congs. And it's like, well, Viet Cong, Viet Cong, like, I'm thinking of Tropic Thunder, like, it's already plural. You wouldn't say Chinese's. So, yeah, he was like, they're Viet Cong. And I'm like, but that's what he says now. I would want to hear what his interview was back then, because it's the same thing that we get with Tomino, right?
Yeah.
Like Domino and George Lucas are so similar in their sort of revisionist ideas about what they were doing 30, 40 years ago. And both of them, you know, in their old age have kind of come to resent their own success. And I think that this is something that you see with people that like become iconic with a franchise, right? They kind of come to resent their fans. They come to resent their success. And then they kind of like, well, I always meant for it to be this. And it's like, if you meant for it to be that, then that would be evident from just watching it, not from you telling me about it 45 years after the fact.
Yeah, that's interesting. And but so in using the J.K. Rowling example, it's almost like it's almost like she was pressured to say these things.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think that because obviously she has her own drama associated with her. But like, I think that every time someone goes back and kind of revises their own work, it's evident that like either their personal opinions have changed, which is fine. Like people change. Yes. We all change our minds about stuff. But I don't think that you can recontextualize something that you've done decades in the past and claim that it was something that it's not. Because what you're going to find is that everyone who has enjoyed that content over that time does not see it that way. They saw it the way that you meant it back in the 70s.
Yeah, and that's interesting because they even brought up Ghostbusters and RoboCop because then it started getting into the politics where like the corporations. Yeah. Corporations are doing this. The corporations are evil. And what they were just talking about is nowadays, you scroll TikTok, the means of the internet allows any messaging to get out there. And what's going on now is identity politics. Like, when did Black Lives Matter first start? Was that 2016, 17?
I want to say it was 2012 when the first like,
maybe I just remember my son being super, super, super young and he was born in 2013. So he had been a few, but anyway, he was like talking about it and it's like, well, how would you know anything about this? Oh, well, so-and-so was talking about it was here. And you know, this person I look up to was, talking about it. And it's like, on one hand, okay, that's good at kind of bringing up issue or you know things, but on the other hand, you're already then creating the fact that there's this conflict that exists when it only does because people with money and power have the means to show the majority of the population on the earth whatever they want, the internet. And let me tell you a sad story. There was this couple, I would go to their Halloween party, it was only like a couple years in a row, me and my wife, and then one year we were going to go, but we decided not to. And there was a shooting at their house and two people were killed. Wow. The guy that did it was someone we became friends with through them. And I was friends with him on Facebook. And on Facebook, he would always talk about gun rights and what are the Democrats doing? Liberals, this. It's like this guy got brainwashed because once the powers that be knew there was a means to communicate anything they wanted to en masse, they did it. And what was it? It's the identity politics. Because at the end of the day, you take an individual human, you sit down with them, you're going to love them. You're going to love each other. Really, you love each other. If you don't, it's like there's not really, the differences are all fake things, labels.
And if anything's a social construct, it's the differences, right? Yeah, I mean, like we're sitting here arguing about Star Wars and Gundam when it's like there are conflicts over, you know, resources and land and faith and things like that that are way more important. And yet these are the things that are being used in a very minor way to drive wedges in between people in order to make you feel more isolated, in order to make you more dependent on other extraneous factors. It's like cult-like behavior. You know, it's the same thing that a cult leader would do is say like, oh, well, your parents don't understand you. Come live with me. And like, you know, clearly they don't agree with you that Luke Skywalker was the last Jedi. You gotta ditch them.
And it's interesting.
They're subhuman.
But that's interesting because you can, when it comes to like ISIS or something where they want to recruit terrorists, it's almost like you can link that. Like this person became ISIS. Oh, we looked at their internet history. It's harder to track that when people want to be social activists because it comes from a good place.
And that's what's so cynical about it is that it preys on people's better nature. It preys on, because everyone wants to be a good person. Like nobody wants to say like, oh yeah, I'm the evil bad guy. And so by preying on that, you convince people to do terrible things in the name of justice, which is not justice. It's
Like the Sweet Baby Ink thing. That thing is a company that wants to consult companies to add more inclusive things. And really on the surface, that's perfectly fine and reasonable. Let's say a developer wants to make, or a publisher wants to make sure their game reaches a wider audience. They're like, well, let's get someone that understands kind of the greater social, you know,
the zeitgeist or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what happens is, okay, if the game turns out bad because they made a change to make something more inclusive, but that required them to change gameplay or something, I don't know. And then, so let's say then that makes the game bad. Well, then you can say, okay, using that is, you know, not something you should do. Yeah. But what was interesting was there's a person that's involved with that company that was on the show that I talked about that I decided I'm not watching anymore. And she was calling out people and saying she wants to fight them. And it's like, okay,
yeah,
any sort of credibility you could have possibly had is now gone. As soon as you want to talk about violence, I can't.
Well, and even just the censorship part of it, right? Because like the whole thing started because somebody created a Steam account that detected whether Sweet Baby Ink was involved with a video game or not, right? And for me, that's just educated, like that's informed consent, right? Like you want to know, regardless of whether you want to know for good reasons or bad reasons, you want to know who was involved in making the video game that you're playing, right? Yeah. And so for the people that this app was made for, they just didn't want to play games that were associated with that. And that's fine. That's 100% their choice.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, you could download that app and be like, well, I love everything that Sweet Baby does and I want to be involved with it. So you can use it to play games that are involved with them. Now, when you turn around and say like, well, no, this is discrimination. This is like a hate operation. Well, then like why, if you don't want people to know that you're associated with a game, why not?
Yeah.
It, like if your motives are positive, if your motives are good and we agree that like, yes, like you are contributing something positive to this video game, then why wouldn't you want people to know that you're involved?
Yeah. And you know,
and so that's where it's like it's the cynicism that has rotted to the core of people where it's like, you know, I love when people post hate comments on my YouTube videos because I'm like, hey, thanks for the engagement. Like, cool. You know, yeah. Like I think that people tend to, when they identify that something is negative, they do everything that they can to suppress it, which then makes you question their motives in the first place. Because if your motives are positive, then why would you want to suppress anything that you think would draw more attention to you?
So,
does that make sense?
Yes, because that's exactly, and I'm Paragon Goadia, hopefully I said that right, was saying Sweet Baby said they would threaten companies that do not comply with them, though. And that's kind of funny because they literally did say that.
they literally did, yeah.
Did you see that too? That video was the GDC video or something? I forget what it was.
Yeah, I think it was at a conference, which is wild to me. It's not even like an offhand statement on Twitter or something like that.
It's almost like they assume the rest of the room is like, yeah, we need to make sure everything's as inclusive as possible. If not, that's the other thing. It's not like it's not inclusive. It's just, you know, even as a white guy, I might write my main character in a story as a white guy, and I don't mean anything against anyone else.
Yeah.
But I do also appreciate like Star Trek. That was one of the coolest things I learned about Gene Roddenberry was he purposely had a diverse cast because the future of humanity would be everyone just being together and not infighting.
And that's something that like you see in Firefly too, like the Joss Whedon show where it's like everyone kind of speaks Chinese because it's like, okay, yeah, you know, you have this huge diverse universe, but like everyone coalesced into this like lingua franca, like everyone speaks English and Chinese because those are the two predominant languages of the human race.
Yeah, I love it. I think what I love it is because I think that's a good example.
That's a narrative choice too.
Yeah.
It's not something that's done just to fill a checkbox. It's like
if you think about it, that's the most woke any story has ever been. What is the future of humanity? Everyone all together, and it doesn't matter anything. There's no more human fighting.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's why
we have to fight the Klingons is because they're different. Exactly. Which is ironic that then we find ways to That's part of the genius of Gene Roddenberry, right? Is that he found a way to replicate human conflict in an age where human conflict was no longer a thing. And so you start talking about these issues of racism and like classism and things, but in a different context that allows people to disassociate from it so that they can understand the underlying principle behind it. And you and I talk about this in terms of like X-Men, right? Oh, it's like, you couldn't make a show that was just about like racism. You can make a show about people discriminating against mutants because we all, like I said earlier, is like everyone wants to be the good guy. No one wants to be Trask, the guy that's building the Sentinels to go hunt down the mutants. But in real life, we don't have mutants, right? We have like whatever you want to. That's the best part, is like it's not defined as like, oh, mutants are representative of African-American communities. They're representative of Muslims. They can be representatives of any disenfranchised community. It's not tied to a specific thing. Yeah. And then you can project that onto whatever is the discriminated group of the current day, right? And that's what makes some of these franchises and some of these stories so timeless, is that they address underlying conflict, human conflict, but they do it in a way that doesn't make people feel like they're the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And so that's what's interesting about modern times now. It's just, it's the, like the social politics are the thing that people that are in a creative space right now are utilizing, you know, so it could be that we look 20 years in the future and we might see this as, oh, interesting story. And people might forget that there was controversy. And not even, and it might even be by that time, the world might even look like what a woke movie looks like. So we wouldn't even think, oh, like right now, if my son was watching first Star Trek, he wouldn't be like, why is there a Soviet in there when they made this during the 60s or whatever? And it's like not understanding that, like, you know, everyone, the world was different back then. And even David Jaffe was saying that to be like in the 80s. The stealth bomber was like a myth that didn't exist, or the stealth bomber. Yeah. And then it was revealed in the 80s and everyone's like, oh, whoa, it's actually real. This thing that we thought was a government conspiracy is real. And so time is also a teller of truths, you know?
Very true.
It's yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to what you're saying, I think that the identity politics behind it are what it creates the conflict, right? Because I can sit here and I can tell you, yes, the stormtroopers are the bad guys in Star Wars. Yes, Trask is the bad guy in the X-Men. But when the messaging behind something is like, oh, well, all white guys are the bad guy. Well, that's not something I can change. You know, I can choose not to be an Imperial stormtrooper. I can choose not to be Trask.
When I was working at Microsoft, this was at like the height of like the Black Lives Matter and wearing a safety pin. Yeah. And it's interesting because in the Microsoft office I was in, there wasn't that many white guys. I think my direct lead was white and one other guy that was on a different team. Everyone around me was multicultural. And I just remember in that situation, it was weird because I felt like maybe I had a responsibility. I kind of don't, because it's one of those things, you're kind of born into it. But I think it's just being a responsible. The responsibility is just always being a good person. I think that's what I was kind of getting out of this. It's like, yeah. I'm white, and there's a lot of times where they might not want to hire a white guy now because they have to do that. But it's not like it's my responsibility to fight that. It's my responsibility to just continue to be nice, to represent what a nice, good human is, and that would win over what someone is.
Yeah, I think, and this is kind of tangentially related, is like Lewis Rossman made a video a couple of weeks ago. If you're not familiar with him, you know, a big right to repair guy. He repairs MacBooks for a living, right? He made a video about this guy that sent him an email that said, like, you know, hey, I can't convince my brother to stop throwing away his phone every 2 years. Like, I'm trying to convince him to fix his phone instead of replacing it every 2 years because the electronic waste and blah, 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 blah. Like, there's so many reasons why you shouldn't replace your phone every 2 years, but his brother didn't care, right? And what Rossman identified is, like, what you want to do as a creator, as an activist, as anything, is you don't want to create an algebra equation for the person that you're trying to talk to solve. And so if the algebra equation is like A plus B equals C, right? A being good people fix their phones and don't buy new phones. B, my brother claims that he's a good person, but doesn't fix his phone. Therefore, C, he's not a good person. And so when you create these narratives, you know, whether it's in the story or not, because ultimately it's like this isn't the stuff that's actually happening on the show in The Acolyte. It's more of the marketing and the social media around it, right? You start creating this narrative that, like, okay, good people like diversity in their entertainment. Acolyte has diversity in their entertainment. Therefore, if you don't like The Acolyte, you don't like diversity, you're a bad person. That is a terrible way to convince people to join your side or to teach them what you're trying to say, you know?
I feel bad about it because, like, the main actress, I think her name is Amandla, which is pretty neat. Amanda, but with an L. Anyway, she's a really good actress, and she's playing two characters. And I always find that compelling when an actor is playing two characters, you know, in a show. But I think
the master of that, let's be honest, is Eddie Murphy.
Oh, like, yeah.
Whether it's The Nutty Professor or Coming to America, like, Eddie Murphy is the master of playing several characters.
That needs to be an episode for another podcast where we go over actors that play multiple. But anyway, because the thing is, like, she's really cool, but she's very young and she's caught up in the social politics and everything surrounding her is double downing on that to where then she feels, and it's not like it's her fault. It's then she feels she's being attacked because she's the main character. The people around her are saying, are doing the things like, no, you're, you know, a powerful woman or survive. But if the right people were around her, probably because what this comes from is I think she said something in an interview where she was like attacking like the toxic group. But that's like not the way you should go about it. But I bet that's being fed to her. Maybe not intentionally, you know, because I think when you get this group and they think they're right.
Yes, man. Like, you know, men are always going to be telling you, like, no, you go do your thing. Like, you're right. Don't ever listen to the haters and all that stuff. And there's some value in that. Like, it's nice to hear that from time to time. But I think that all of us value that friend that sits there and says, hey, I know you're feeling some type of way about this. I'm going to tell you something. Don't react this way because it's the wrong way to go.
Which, like, is our normal conversations before every podcast.
Pretty much.
No. But no, and that's the thing, you know, going back to Acolyte real quick, like,
yeah,
again, I love all the actors that are in it. Like, they did a good job with the acting, the set design, the cinematography, the
choreo- the dude from Squid Games learned English for the role.
Like, yes. Oh, and that acting's incredible. And then even the lightsaber combat, like they had in the recent episode, just blew my mind. I was like, that's great stuff. It's just that it's a bad story that has all these plot holes that don't make sense. And it's like, why did they go with that decision? And no way am I like the thing that drives me is like, oh, I can't wait to see this actor act. Like Daphne Keene or whatever, the X-23, you know, actress, like, she's physical. Like, I like it when actors actually do physical stuff, but then wearing makeup and then acting, like, I appreciate this stuff way more and more the more I, and the way the guy, well, should I spoil? I mean, there's a character that you find out who they are. And so that's another example of almost it's the character plays two people. It's actor is playing a character that's pretending to be two people. And I thought that was compelling. I was like, wow, great job.
The voice actor who does Shar Aznable and also Quattro Vegina.
Okay. That's good. Oh, that's a whole other thing. I feel like we can dive more into the way Shar and Quattro act and play. I wonder if we could. Anyway, that's for another time.
Next week's show.
Yeah, because we talked. This was good. It was good to get it out here because at the end of the day, what's going on is I think it's perfectly reasonable to be critical of something.
Yeah,
I think it's okay, and I think we shouldn't shut people down when they are critical of something. But
agreed.
The problem is, I think when you, and this happens a lot, where people don't really realize why they don't like something, but sometimes it's the surface level things that's the easy, like, oh, maybe it's because the main character's a woman, you know, and it's like, that's not really what's bothering you, but you don't know because you don't realize that for once, or not for once, but now it's like Disney has bad writers, and you're not used to that, so you're like, well, what am I seeing? Well,
And it goes back to you and I have our two rules of online discourse when it comes to media and fiction, right? Number one, don't state your opinion as fact, because ultimately somebody likes The Acolyte. I don't know who, but somebody does. You know, maybe not everybody does, but like, that's their opinion. They're entitled to it. That's fine. You can't say it's objectively a bad show. Even though it is, but no, I'm just, and then number two, don't attribute motive to people that you don't know their motive. So if someone says that The Acolyte is a good show, that doesn't necessarily make them a shill. Maybe they just enjoy certain parts of it that you don't. If someone says that The Acolyte is a bad show, it doesn't mean that they hate women. It doesn't mean that they hate minorities. It just means that maybe they're looking for something different from their show that you are. And so when you start like saying, well, you only feel this way because you think this, it's like, did I say that?
No. Yeah. No. And that's amazing, because, you know, thinking back, like Star Wars Explained, it's like his coverage of Acolyte. I haven't really seen it all, just some little things. It's a breath of fresh air, because they're not talking about the controversy. It's like, I almost want to get their take on lore stuff, because there's cool little lore things that happen, you know?
And I remember Theory used to be very, Theory was always honest about his opinions about Star Wars and stuff. Yeah. Lately, I think he's gotten much more into the drama of it. But I think that it was because people made him pick a side, basically. And that's ultimately what it comes down to, is a lot of the times when someone is just being honest and they're trying to be diplomatic about it, but then people start attacking them for not picking the side that they want them to be on, you're going to push them to the other side.
And that's funny, because and I'll say we're at the end of the show and there's not too many people here, but you know, when Bandai didn't like that I complained that Gundam Breaker 4 wouldn't be on Xbox, and so they're like, oh, so you think Bandai hates Xbox? And then we're not working together anymore. I wasn't going to be like, okay, I'll take it back. You know, I was just disappointed, because at the end of the day, I made the connection with these people.
Yeah.
And I worked with them. And the fact that they were willing to just drop me like that, that's kind of why this episode is the way it is, because I feel like I see this happen to other people, and it happened to me, even if not to a huge degree, because luckily I have a full-time job that's not related to this.
Right.
But at the same time, it hurt my feelings. I got to know those people, and I
think that you raised a very good point, because it's like, hey, what's the number one Xbox title? Call of Duty. And you're going to do a Gundam partnership with Call of Duty, and then the next Gundam game that you release isn't going to be on that platform.
I know. Hey, look,
I'm sitting here like a, like, what's
it's not name? Like we know anything about video games. Oh, wait.
Right. It's like dodgeball. I'm sitting here like, bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out for him. Like, but and ultimately, because at the end of the day, you and I are both fans of the things that we talk about.
Yeah.
And that's where it's, and I think everyone is, like, everyone who's talking about The Acolyte, they're fans of Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So anyway, this was another great one, Stephen. Thank you for allowing me to get this stuff out there.
We don't often like touch on drama stuff, and I'm always happy to kind of indulge that side of it, because you and I typically don't engage on the same level that I think you see.
Right. I think we kind of, it's like we're looking at the middle of both sides and really understanding where people are coming from. And a lot of times these reactions people have, they don't realize what they're doing. And I bet they're all really good people at the end of the day that are just caught up in, again, like I was explaining with the sad story about my buddy, or it wasn't my buddy, but a guy I knew well enough that he got brainwashed by social media, murdered people. The internet is used to brainwash people to be divisive. And so that's a dark, dark way to end this. But
this take care of the people you love. Go, you know.
Yes.
Go text a friend after this.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Thanks everyone that showed up. This was great. Awesome conversation. I think there was other things I was going to say, but we've talked a whole lot. But see y'all later. Good talk.
Hey, cheers, everyone.